Hello and welcome to the IDEMS podcast. I'm David Stern, founding director of IDEMS, and it's my pleasure to be here today with Michael Obiero, longtime collaborator and great friend. Hi, Mike.
Hello, David. Always a pleasure to meet you and have a chat.
Absolutely. And we're in a beautiful part of Kenya at your home now, recording this. And so it's a great privilege to visit.
It's been great having you for the last couple of days. And hopefully you are finding the environment quite suitable for your needs.
always. No, it's wonderful here. But I do want to dig in. It's been a while since we last did an episode. A lot has happened. You've been working on the textbooks, of course, which I'm sure we'll mention, but also this MSc program, which is now due to launch in September. And next week, we have the STAC conference. So it's a busy time for you.
Exciting times indeed. Some of the projects we envisioned are coming to fruition. We can see them developing in interesting ways. For the textbook, we've been having school visits, talking to teachers directly, experiencing the use of the books in the classroom. As you mentioned, the MSc program is going to be launched in the next month or so, in September. And that's a program we've been thinking about for the last 13 years, at least.
At least.
And then for the first time, we're having the International STAC Conference in Kenya, in Africa. Of course, very exciting.
It's the first time it's out of Europe.
That's correct.
This is a big deal, and it's got a good attendance. About 100 people are coming from all over the world. Really impressive. So I want to dig in first to this MSc program. We've had a few other episodes around this, but this is the Open University of Kenya, who is launching in collaboration with us. We've got an MOU with them, but it's really been a lot of your driving behind the scenes, this Masters in Mathematical Innovation.
As you mentioned, we've been thinking about the program for a long time, and the initial motivation of the program was a number of teachers wanted to come back to the university to do their MSc. And we realized that an MSc in math was not a good fit for the skills they wanted to be productive in the work environment.
So let's just dig into this for a second. It is these returning teachers that were always our main motivation. When you say it's not a good fit, their motivation was split. Some of them were taking the MSc to leave education.
Yes. Some of them wanted to leave education. Some of them wanted to continue with education. And the interesting thing is that most of the teachers had taken a number of years outside university education while teaching at high school, trying to get enough money to come back and do their MSc. And so the long break from university mathematics, of course, it was difficult for them to get back to university mathematics after a long time.
And when we say university mathematics, this is pure mathematics, applied mathematics, applied statistics. These are the main MSc programs that are available in Kenya.
That's correct.
And they are absolutely, they're slightly old-fashioned, one might say, but they're absolutely sensible programs if you are wanting to carry on into a mathematics PhD or a statistics PhD and become an academic. That's what they're designed for.
True.
But that is really not the motivation of any of these teachers.
No, most of them are just looking for promotions, maybe ways of working directly with the Ministry of Education. And so they just wanted a promotion that would place them in a better position to work directly with the ministry or other organizations.
Absolutely. And I think the other organizations is a key thing. Many of them, particularly on the applied statistics, were saying, this will get me an NGO job. But the program wasn't designed for that. It wasn't designed for either of these things. It was designed to try and create the next generation of mathematics academics.
Exactly.
Whereas what we found and what we knew is the really good students in those pure programs, they were always the students that were carrying on, the ones who got, like yourself,
a scholarship of some sort, and at the time it was a graduate assistantship.
Yes, and that was the good students that we had. Yes. And one of my deep learnings when I was a lecturer here was the fact that actually I shouldn't just focus on the good students. The weak students who were not at the same level academically to pursue a mathematics academic career, they were really valuable. I mean, the best MSc program I did was by a school teacher He was actually not a school teacher. He was a TVET, I think.
He was in TVET, yes.
But he was an educator. And he was doing applied statistics, and yet he couldn't use the computer himself. And so he was going to the cyber cafe to get someone to type his notes up for him. And yet he did the most amazing MSc project, which changed my thinking about assessment in statistics training in TVETs. It was amazing.
I remember he was using CAST to teach his students about statistics. And this was just an innovation which he introduced his students to using these textbooks. Yeah. And students found them so valuable that his class did extremely well compared to other teachers.
Well, this is the thing. It was a 20% increase on a centralized exam, which he was then able to demonstrate was nothing to do with him, because he got his colleague to use the same materials and they had a 20% increase, and there was no difference between those two classes. Yeah. So it wasn't the teacher, it was this effect. And then really, that work is what convinced me it wasn't the textbook. It was the assignment in the textbook. Because the students who had access to the textbook but didn't do the assignments, they didn't get the 20% increase. This is what he found out. It was incredible. And that's where my obsession became with these assessment pieces and the work on Stack. And then the long story on this is that we've now gone full circle of actually recognizing that, yes, the assessment is important, but really in terms of delivering it, a really good textbook is a good way to deliver it and to get it to people. So this is something which is part of the journey we've been on, and we can attribute it to this student who, from an academic perspective, was not the top of the class, but in terms of the work he did, it was the most meaningful and important of any of my students, even better than your work on mutating quivers, which was not the most useful work. It was fun, it was good mathematics, but it was not as meaningful.
That's why I'm more in academia now than in math. It's about impact.
Exactly. And this is where, you know, all those years ago, we started discussing this. We need to recognize that these students coming back into education, they are an incredible resource for the country, for the communities, because they actually have knowledge which is of value because of their experience. It is just not of value to turn them into world-class mathematicians.
Which is almost impossible without the support environment around them.
Exactly. So let's try to design the program which is actually needed and which will help them contribute and help them progress. That's where this program has been conceived.
And the program also takes care of the different needs of the different students. So if someone wanted to continue teaching in the classroom, we wanted to give them tools to make them more productive, both in class and in terms of developing teaching and learning materials. If they wanted to get into statistics, there's a pathway that leads into statistics, mathematical modeling.
Responsible AI.
There's AI, which is a big thing now, and we can't ignore it. Yeah. And we have to teach people how to use it responsibly.
But we couldn't resist. There is also a pathway for those mathematicians. It is gatekept by a category theory course.
It's a clever way of making sure that only those who are really, really committed and passionate to put in the work, to do the math, can actually do it. So anyone who wants to do the math can, of course, do the math.
If you're wanting to graduate, then you will not choose that route. That route is deliberately designed so that it will deter those who are not the mathematicians in making wanting to become mathematically advanced. But it is also really interestingly designed that it doesn't teach any mathematics that is taught in other MSc programs in Kenya. It's filling in the gaps. It's combinatorics. It's number theory. These are things which are not widely taught in Kenya. And so it's giving people entry points to research mathematics, to formal mathematics, from a perspective that would enable them to carry on to further studies and to bring these new domains back into Kenya to expose a broader audience to them in the future. Whether anyone does it or not, that's to be seen. I'm also conscious that the Open University of Kenya has a minimum number of students it wants on a given course. And so it might actually mean that it's a few years before those ones are.
Yeah, I think for now we are a bit safe. Most people will go the route of education or statistics or modeling. So it's a long way until we see someone who really wants to do the math. We are passionate of the math, of course, and we'll be excited to have someone take the math.
And I think over time, I would envisage there will be people who will go into that route, and it'll be a small stream, but it will be one where those would be the people who I could imagine then going on. And they would probably have to look to international PhDs, because that's what that route is designed to sort of take people to, because there aren't people studying those much in Kenya. I mean, you're an exception. You did do a number theory PhD, but there's no number theory being taught.
Our main focus, though, was on the education bit because of the CBE implementation, which is going on in the country. And there are just so many opportunities that are presented in the course of the implementation, which we feel that can be harnessed through the MSc program. At the forefront is supporting teachers who are actually implementing the CBE in classrooms to better understand what CBE means, better understand how to deliver the curriculum, because the learner is at the center of the curriculum. Then we have technology, which the government feels should be used widely in the CBE implementation. And we just want to enable teachers to understand what technologies are out there, how they can be used. And at the forefront are open education resources, which there are lots of them, but figuring out which ones are relevant and appropriate is a skill that needs to be passed on to the teachers. So these emerging challenges and opportunities are what we feel should be addressed currently. And that's the present focus of the program.
Absolutely. And the key is, if we come back to now your textbooks, the idea of these open education resources is they need to be built by the people who are in the classroom.
Exactly.
And so this is your army of educators who are doing the MSc, who then can be the ones actually figuring out how to develop these resources and so on.
And the school visits have been an eye-opener, because we developed the textbooks without much involvement of teachers in the field. We gave teachers access to the textbooks and we encouraged them to use them in their classrooms. And this was an opportunity to find out how the textbooks were being used. And we could see some positives as well as some challenges in terms of implementation, which just highlights the need of having the teacher at the forefront of development of the resource. They know their learners very well. They have the experience of teaching, even though the experience is from the previous curriculum being phased out. They know what assessment materials will bring out the best qualities in their learners. And these are some of the comments we've been getting from teachers in schools.
If we think about how we had designed this process, teachers would have been involved all the way along. The distance between what was conceived and the realities, the loss of the funding from the US embassy meant suddenly all the teacher engagement activities were lost. Then there was a crowdfunding campaign which successfully got funding to enable you to continue and actually keep people working on it, but did not raise enough to do the pilots that were supposed to be happening alongside this. So that was something where, again, you was at the minimum level. We've never been able to push to actually have the funding to enable this sort of interaction. Even now, the interaction as it's happened, it's an interaction of convenience, because you have your connections, Zach has his connections, and you're able to make these things happen, even though there isn't the funding to really support this activity. This is something where it has been amazing how much you've achieved, given how much has gone wrong.
Yeah, and funding is a big part, because the last few days have taught us that you need to have regular scheduled school visits where you actually sit down with the teacher and have a discussion about what went right, what went wrong, what can be improved. And this needs to happen across different types of schools, because different schools have different capabilities and different challenges. So just having one school is not enough. But as you put it, we've managed to make some progress despite the many challenges being faced by our organization in terms of funding. And some of those are commitment from one of the biggest schools in the region, that they want to be a benchmark in terms of development and piloting of the textbook. And that's kind of a big deal at this stage.
Absolutely. And the thing is, this is where, right from the beginning, we've developed these online trainings for teachers to be able to do that, because we couldn't do the school visits because there wasn't the funding for that. So we've developed these online trainings. And that's something where we already knew face-to-face was important.
True.
But all you could do was the online. And the online, in that context, let's be clear, it hasn't worked yet. Yeah. Teachers, they're overwhelmed, new curriculum. If you're not there with them, if you're not holding their hand through this, they're not going to take on additional things out of their own initiative right now. Now is the wrong time for that.
Yeah.
It might work, and this is the other thing you've been talking about, is collaborating with national entities like Semester, like the Teacher Service Commission. These are entities where actually embedding some of the things that have been developed, some of these e-learning components, some of these other ways of interacting with teachers may be possible through them. And that's something you've got the interactions with. There's still hope that that's going to evolve, and particularly in combination with this MSE program.
And it fits in nicely, because when we approached Semester, we told them we have a potential solution to the problem of textbooks in schools. And they were extremely excited. Our challenge is we could not reach many schools. For them, reaching schools was not a problem because they have the data of all schools in the country. The MSE program could be an avenue of, say, TSE using for capacity building of teachers and for promotions, for instance. So having these discussions between the Teacher Service Commission, that you could use this MSE program actually for capacity building. I know currently we have retraining programs by the government, but they can only reach a small number of teachers because they have to be organized physically, and then at least one teacher per school within the region is invited. So not all teachers benefit. And in most cases, we found out that those are extremely rushed because so much has to be covered in a very little period of time. So mostly it's just sharing PowerPoint presentations that teachers can read on their own after the events have been held. So we are looking at the MSE program, and the way it's structured with the micro-certifications, you could have a program that TSE says, okay, now this course is what we need for the teachers at this particular time. And they can encourage all teachers in the country to take the course, of course, at a discount, so that it's a way of reaching out to all teachers in the country to retrain them on delivery of the competency-based education, or if it's the use of open education resources, which the textbook is one of them. If Semester and KICD decide to take on the textbook to be a government-issued book, then the MSE program, some of the courses within the program could be a way of helping teachers understand how to actually use the textbook and actually how to contribute to development of the textbook. Because it's always our view that the teachers should be at the forefront of developing their own teaching and learning materials.
And the thing which is so interesting about how you've done this is we're not saying that everyone should do the MSE program. There's 22,000 math teachers in Kenya. But what you're saying is that the micro-certification, which the Open University of Kenya has, means that actually there could be individual modules which are serving a broader purpose and which could get redesigned. Yeah. And it might be that they get redesigned in such a way that they're now tailored specifically. We talk about variants at IDEMS, that a variant of that module is then tailored to Semester or TSE's needs. And so that would be absolutely imaginable to then take that, co-design it with them, and for it to serve this double purpose, actually serving both as an entry point to the MSE program as well as professional development for teachers. These are still pipe dreams right now, but the interactions you're having really mean that this is something where over the next 2-3 years, we could see that happening.
Yes. We are also open, because we are part of the development of the program, and together with IDEMS, we are looking towards implementing the program. So if TSE approaches us and says that this is an extremely good program, but maybe we need one or two more courses added to the program to meet our needs, we are extremely happy to partner with them.
Absolutely. And the beauty of how the Open University of Kenya has designed these programs means that it's all modular. This could actually be lifelong learning. This could be inserted into the program without disrupting the program as a whole.
True. And the way the program is designed, you say it's modular. It means that a teacher can pay for a module if they can afford one module. And if they do a number of modules, then they get the postgraduate diploma. If they continue doing a number of courses and projects, they get the MSc, for instance. So it's extremely flexible. It's fully online. We are envisioning having bits of blended in-person components.
Subject to funding.
So everything depends on if we have funding, then we can do more. But for now, we are doing just enough to make sure that it's a very good program. Funding just makes us do a bit more to make it exceptional.
It is true that with a bit of funding, we could do so much more. But what is amazing about the approach you have and what you've been doing is the funding is only added value.
True.
Nothing you're doing depends on the funding. I love this approach. And it's so different to what I'm used to in the UK, in Europe, in the US, where people have wonderful ideas for projects. Yeah. And they make grant applications. And if the grant is funded, they try their best to do it while the grant is there. And then once the grant is finished, then they move on. And when the grant is not funded, then, well, okay, that idea wasn't good enough. True. And then, that's putting all the power in the funder's hands. Whereas really what you're doing is saying, no, this is happening.
For sustainability issues, we have to think about what can we do without funding? And almost everything we do as part of InnoDems or whatever I envision myself has always been, what can I do without funding or with the minimal funding available? So that if we get funds, it's just added value. When I talk to teachers, one of the bottlenecks of teachers continuing with their studies is finances. And most teachers want to continue with their studies, but the problem is they don't have the funds. Once they finish college, of course, they have to pay loans. Most of them move on in terms of getting married or starting families. And it's extremely expensive setting up a new family and you are paying student loans. So continuing with education is put at the back of their mind until such a time when they're able to afford it. And by the time they're able to afford it, the traditional MSCs are no longer a good fit because the reasons they want to do the MSc is different from someone coming fresh from the bachelor's degree. So as I talk to most of the teachers and I describe the MSc program, it's modular. You can pay for one module if you can afford it. It's fully online. You don't have to leave your workstation to go and do the program in a given university. The project is a big issue. And I tell them that if you are doing the education component, even statistics, even AI, you can do the project with your learners in your class and present on that project because we want projects to be actionable pieces of research that go towards improving what the teachers are doing. So this is an extremely appealing program to most teachers.
Absolutely. And we focused in a lot on this MSc. We're both very excited about it. It's not the first time we've talked about this together, but it is moving forward. Yes. And I want to bring out I was shocked in a positive way at when we discussed this with the Open University of Kenya. My question is, what's your upper limit for numbers?
Yeah.
And they said, upper limit? What do you mean? And I said, well, if you have 100 students on this MSc program, that would be huge. And yeah, of course, lovely, not a problem. What if you had 1,000? That's what we're aiming for. This idea that this could be an MSc program with 1,000 students a year, once I actually thought it through, I realized 1,000 students a year when you've got 22,000 math teachers, that's 5%. You're getting more new teachers every year than this.
Yes.
So this is actually not unrealistic. If this actually really did take off, getting this huge numbers of students on this program, that changes it in its nature and its role in society and how it's actually working within the education system. Yeah. The potential of this is just incredible. It may seem very original as a program, and in some ways it is, but it's really inspired by and learning from the AIMS MSc, which both of us have taught on, which has been going now for over 15 years, over 20 years, I believe. And it's been extremely successful. It offers full scholarships to the top students all around the continent.
That's correct.
But it is an MSc, as the MSc in Maths Innovation, which is all about opening people's eyes to the possibilities. It is an MSc where, yes, some students may carry on into academia, but others are intended to go back into education, into NGOs, into industry. That is how it is designed. It is not a specialist master's. It's a generalist master's. Yes. And this is, if you think about the program that we've developed, it is just a formalization of that into a scalable form for within a country. Mm. If a student gets offered an AIM scholarship, I'd recommend that. It's an incredible experience.
Yeah.
But that's a handful of students a year from a given country.
Yeah.
Whereas the need in somewhere like Kenya is maybe 1,000 students a year.
Yes.
And to recognize that and to really rise to that challenge, as Open University of Kenya is doing, blew my mind. I don't know whether they'll succeed, whether they'll get there. But that is their ambition for this program was just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at AIMS and they can only take not more than 500 students in the entire continent in any given year. And here we are only for the Kenya case where we are saying, okay, we can take 1,000 a year. So this is very scalable and we might be setting ourselves for other challenges. As I visited schools, I was meeting teachers in chemistry, teachers in biology, who were like, how can you do something only for math? What about us? So we have to go back to the drawing board, I'm afraid, and maybe the next year or so and figure out.
Oh, I'm with you. My ambitions are big. But next year or so is a little bit too soon for me. We need to see this one through at least 2 years. Maybe in 3 years' time, I'm willing to take on the sciences or broader than that. But you're right. This is a need which is beyond maths. Maths is the problem subject. Yeah. So I think we're correct to start there. Yeah. But you're right. This is a need which is much broader. And it would need broader sets of expertise. We have the expertise amongst us to do this for maths. In our contacts, in our networks, we brought in professors from Edinburgh, from Caltech, who are contributing to the program. This is something where we have those contacts, we can bring those people in. But to do this for chemistry, for biology, for physics, at the same time, maybe why not English literature while you're doing that?
For the textbook as well. We are having all these requests that you are having a textbook for math. Can I have a textbook for Kiswahili? Can I have a textbook for history?
I think the textbooks are more reasonable. I'm willing to work on that with you over the next few years. The MSc program, give me a few years to actually catch my breath on the math innovation before we start discussing what this would look like to do it for other subjects.
Yeah.
I think it's about time we should finish this episode. I had one last thing I wanted to just get you to finish on. And this is, we've talked about the textbook. We've talked about the MSc. We've hardly talked about the STAT conference. Just very briefly, this is really the people who are coming into this. Many of them have never been exposed to the Kenyan context.
Yeah.
What is this opportunity? What does this opportunity represent to you?
So it's helping the international community to try and really understand what's going on in Kenya and in Africa, and also exposing the local community to international experts in the field of assessment, especially using technology in mathematics. I'm really looking forward to engaging the education stakeholders in the country, maybe having a discussion with the international experts on how they can benefit from the international expertise in terms of the MSc, in terms of the textbook, which has, of course, stack exercises. We are looking towards actually setting up a research agenda around the work we are doing and the work we're envisioning to do with the ministry and other ministry stakeholders. So in a nutshell, one of my goals is to bring everyone on the same table and just openly discuss about the opportunities that are available and how we can explore and respond to these opportunities.
And I just wanted to draw out, you said in Kenya and in Africa, and you have successfully got, I think it's something like 10 African countries represented, which is not easy, given funding, given the rest of it. It's a real achievement. Some of them are long-term collaborators, Ethiopia, Tanzania. They've been part of this journey for a long time. But the breadth of people coming is really impressive. So congratulations. I look forward to next week's event and hopefully interesting things will emerge, which is all we can ever hope for.
True. And we are hoping for the best. Some of the guests are already here in my home.
It's quite crowded tonight.
We are having fun. We are meeting other guests in a few hours, especially the Caltech students. And we're extremely grateful to the Caltech community for supporting the work we are doing, especially the conference and the work around textbooks. We are extremely grateful. So looking forward to having another discussion after the conference and just having a discussion of where do we go from here.
Well, actually, now you say that, maybe we should have another discussion on the Caltech Summer Internship, which you're hosting, and what's happening there. That's for another episode. We're already slightly longer than our normal episodes, so it's a good time to wrap up. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much, David, and glad to have this discussion.